Hey guys, this is Anna. So before we get on with the show today, let's hear from our sponsor.
Hey guys, this is the Ramblings of a Transgender Christian. I am your host, Anna Hudak. Sorry if you hear the noise from the apartment next to me, but nothing I can do about that. Gotta get this episode done. Supposed to have done it yesterday, but it's been a rough week. So everything is very late this week. Very sorry for everybody, especially on my Patreon, which I know there's gonna be on my Patreon currently, but still, if there were, sorry about how late everything's been. I have not been doing well. It's been very hard to do anything, really. There's been a lot of stuff going on in my personal life. Also, just viewing the world outside, especially Texas this past week, when they basically overturned Roe v. Wade. Basically, it's impossible for women to get abortions now. There's not even a exemption for rape and incest. There are literal abortion bounty hunters now in Texas. And people who raped, people can now sue the people that they raped. So yeah, delightful. And there's a bunch of other shit that happened in Texas this past week in addition to that are just fucking awful and just fucking jaw-dropping. I mean, look, I say this with sincerity. Like, I am not saying this in any sort of jest. I'm not saying this lightly. I am saying this with the full gravity that comes with this statement. But Texas is the modern day Sodom. Sodom was punished by God for its inhospitality and oppression of the poor, and its sexual immorality, being rape. And what is Texas doing? They are promoting rape, let's be honest, because there's basically no repercussions for it. I mean, literally, the punishment for getting an abortion is far worse than getting raped, than, being a rapist. And I think rapists now have a way to even sue the people that they raped, so basically, if we're promoting rape, let's be honest. They are completely inhospitable to anyone. And just like ever immigration, what they think of immigration down there. And look at how they oppress people. I mean, it is a very oppressive place. They oppress women, they oppress people, they oppress anyone with with a uterus, let's be honest. Anyone who is capable of getting pregnant, they oppress. They oppress LGBT people. They oppress Black people. They oppress Hispanic people. Who other, oh my God, how they treat homeless people is fucking abhorrent. I mean, we're literally criminalizing homelessness down there. It's Sodom. There is no difference. Okay, I mean, there is difference, but you know what I mean. This is Sodom. This is what God punished Sodom for. And yet, Texas is doing it in the name of God, of Yahweh, the same Yahweh who, fucking obliterated Sodom and Gomorrah thousands of years ago. Yeah, somebody tells me this does not turn out well for Texas. A few days ago I found myself, just at begging God, to fucking obliterate Texas, destroy that wicked place, Lord. But then, I just got fucking smacked upside the head with memory of, Abraham. So remember in Genesis when God told Abraham that he was going to destroy Sodom, and Abraham sat there and pleaded with God. I think they all got all the way down to like 10 righteous people. If there are 10 righteous people, please do not destroy Sodom. And God said, yeah, if there are 10 righteous people, I will not destroy Sodom. Moses turned out there weren't 10 people, righteous people, not even. And so God destroyed Sodom. And so I just sat there like, what the fuck am I doing? Why am I sitting here begging God to destroy Texas when there are thousands, if not millions, of righteous people still in that state? I'm just asking for God to fucking obliterate that. Like, what am I doing? So now I have changed the prayer to, Lord, judge, bring your vengeance, bring your power down upon the leaders who do these wicked acts. Do not punish the innocent, but for the love of God, do not let this oppression continue on. Punish those who do this evil, wicked, these wicked, wicked things down in Texas. You know, just because right now what's going on in Texas is fucking evil. It is fucking wicked. And there's no other way to say it. It's fucking evil. You know, and these are the exact same motherfuckers who refuse to wear masks and get vaccinated because my body, my choice. Their words. But if you have a uterus, it's not your body and not your choice, you see, because, you see, you're clearly just a woman. Even if you're a trans man, sorry, you're a woman because, you know, you have a uterus and that's all that matters, you know, is your genitals at the end of the day. Oh, wait, you got, even if you got, you know, got surgery, well, it doesn't matter because your chromosomes, even if you had the chromosomes of, you know, the quote-unquote opposite sex, which does happen with trans people, you were still assigned that thing at the end of the day, so get over it, you see, so still a woman, so, you know, we gotta oppress you, you know, but let's be honest, trans men don't really exist. They were just, you know, confused lesbians who got converted into the trans agenda by, you know, men, you know, because of the patriarchy, because the patriarchy is trying to destroy the definition of femininity by making people think that men can be women and by taking away our precious girls, you see. That's how this works, obviously. Very big brained. Okay, anyway. Sorry, you could tell I'm not, I'm kind of feeling a bit cynical this week. It's been a rough week. But today, my friends, we've got an article by Shane Claiborne, who recently went to a mask-free worship service led by Greg Locke. And of course, he wasn't mask-free, he was wearing one, but still, you know. And he has a lot of thoughts about it, and I feel like that it's something that we need to talk about here on this podcast. So for those who do not know Shane Claiborne, who he is, first off, just a true man of God. Even back when I was a hardline right-winger, you know, a fucking libertarian, you know, who was borderline anarcho-capitalist, I very much respected this dude. Because it was clear to me, even back then, that this man truly walks the talk. This man, you could just feel, like, I actually saw him speak. Like, I actually did go and see him speak on his gun tour. On his tour where he was, you know, I forget what it was, but for his book about guns and why we need to, you know, stop using guns. You know, I was like, oh my God, this man, like, I still disagree with his stance. Like, for me, my stance is if the elites or their enforcers, aka the military and police, have access to weaponry, then, you know, certain weaponry, then the working class should have access to the same thing. So I don't believe in any gun control laws at all. I think that they are very classist because, let's be honest, the elites are going to get those weapons. Yeah, it's just all it does is make it harder for the working class. So I don't believe in gun control of any kind whatsoever. I recognize that means bad people are going to get it, but I believe that at the end of the day, the benefits outweigh the negatives, and that an armed working class is a strong working class. So I definitely disagree with Shane Claiborne, but I definitely recognize where he comes from. I very much respect him for where he comes from, and I mean, he's a true man again. The very first time when I saw him speak, and then ever since I've read his books and seen some of his other stuff, it's just like, oh my God, this is like, you could just tell that this man is a man of God. He's someone like I'm just saying, like, God damn, I'm just saying, he's the demons are probably trembling at the thought of him. I'm just saying, my God, just the power that you could just feel coming from him, the love you can feel coming from him, just being in his presence, you can just tell. He's written a lot of great books. I highly recommend Executing Grace, which is the Christian argument against the death penalty. That book completely changed how I look at it. Jesus for President, another great book. Those are the books I can think of off the top of my head I've read by him. And I've read another one or two, but I can't remember them. But anyway, enough talking about him. So let's dive into this article, because I do think that this is something that is important to talk about. This has a lot of very important thoughts, and something that it just a lot of warnings that we need to be on the lookout for. And so I want to heed these warnings. So the article, of course, you can find in the show notes or the YouTube description. It is from Red Letter Christians, which is the organization that Shay Claiborne runs, I think, along with Tony Campolo or something like that. I'm probably butchering. I probably messed up that name. Probably not his name, but somebody else. Don't remember his name. Yeah, Tony Campolo. Okay. But anyway, so the article is titled "The New American Revival: Christian Nationalism's Delta Variant." This past weekend, and remember, this is Shane Claiborne writing, I visited the mask-free worship service of Global Vision Bible Church, led by charismatic Trump apologist Greg Locke. And I managed to wear a mask without getting kicked out. In fact, I was invited to stay late to help fold up chairs after the service, which I gladly did. The people were nicer than I anticipated they would be, but the theology was worse than I could ever imagine. It is clear that Christian nationalism now has its own Delta variant. I had plenty of pushback. Some folks saw I was picking a fight and reminded me that many of the folks who attended these services come armed and ready for a fight. Why encourage them? Others questioned if attending the services would simply legitimize the fringe group or give them more of a platform or airtime than they deserve. I get the concerns. My mom probably made one of the best challenges to my decision to attend a service, reminding me that Tennessee has snake-handling churches, which also have bad, even deadly theology, but I've never felt the need to attend one of them. She makes a good point, except that the only person whose life is at stake in the snake-handling churches is the one handling the snakes. Not so a Global Vision Baptist. Sorry, Global Vision Bible Church. There are many lives at stake as the church insists on hosting mask-free services. I thought it might be a couple hundred people, bigger than most of our snake-handling churches, but not nearly as big as our mega churches. And I was right about that. The service was held in a big top, old-school red and white candy cane striped circus tent. I was guided to a parking place by a very friendly man with a security vest on, and I was boxed in, so I wouldn't even be able to leave if I wanted to. After much prayer and reflection, I had resolved not to disrupt the service, no matter how bad it got, despite Jesus' own decision to flip tables on the temple. After all, I'm not Jesus, and while I'm willing to take up my cross, I'm not looking to be a martyr. I did, however, decide not to be subtle with my message, being evangelical at heart. and I wore a mask with the words Love Thy Neighbor on it. I also wore a shirt that said Black Lives Matter to God. Ooh boy, yeah, so he tells me that's not exactly a message that would go over well at that kind of church. Ouch. I'm just saying, I would not have that courage to wear that, like, I'm not sure I would have the courage to wear a mask at that church, but, you know, maybe I could do that. Wear a church that says, Black Lives Matter to God, ooh boy, that's, just saying, I think I would have to have some security. I don't think, even with security, I don't know if I'd be brave enough to wear that to that church. So bravo to Shane for that. Ooh boy. I end up being honest, I don't think I would have that kind of courage. Boy, wow. Okay. Anyway, continuing on. I also wore a shirt that said Black Lives Matter to God, since one of the many troubling things I've heard from Mr. Locke is a total discrediting of Christians concerned about systemic injustice or the residue of slavery and racism. And I wore a large metal cross made from the barrel of a gun. Because for those who don't know, what Shane Claiborne does is that he invites people to donate for guns. He tries to get people to give up for guns. And what he does with the guns that people give up is he makes gardening tools out of them. Or just other things, you know. Like, not always gardening tools. Like, you know, necklaces out of, you know, guns, you know. But a lot of the stuff he makes out of them are gardening tools out of these guns. That's what he does with guns that people give up. Because that's his ministry, because he wants Christians to give up for guns. Just to explain that a little bit there. One of the things I am convinced of is that the cross and the gun offer us two very different versions of power. One that says there's something worth dying for, and the other says there's something worth killing for. I chose an entrance where I saw a smiling face, a kind greeter welcoming a visitor. She welcomed me with the same smile, even with my mask on. But as it wasn't long before, two security men with earpieces in their ears came talking to me. They asked me if I had a medical reason for wearing a mask. And I said yes, which was honest. I believe we all have a medical reason to wear a mask, which goes back to the great command that Jesus inscribed on my mask itself. Love thy neighbor. Even after a conversation with the security guards, I got a fist pound and a warm welcome. As people settled in, I couldn't help but notice the wide array of messages on shirts, hats, tattoos, and bumper stickers. It's something evangelicals are passionate about, spreading the word. And we are well equipped with a multi-million dollar Christian industrial complex to assist us in bearing witness. And hey, I had a message unashamedly displayed on my body too. But these were different. Okay, I used to work at Lifeway Christian Bookstore before the company went under. I worked at the Fort Wayne store. And yeah, oh my God. The amount of shit there that literally existed and for no other purpose than to show the world that you're an insufferable evangelical. Oh my God. It's fucking insane. Like, we literally had, like, fucking bread pans with Bible verses on them. We had, you know, t-shirts, we had bracelets, we had, you know, keychains, we had everything. We had fucking Rubik's Cubes with Bible verses on them. Like, it was fucking insane, man. Pencils of Bible verses. Like, oh my God. Fucking insane. Like, looking back now, it's like, oh my God, that's fucking nuts. But back then, when, you know, when I was deep involved inside evangelical culture and, like, in that bubble, really, because I was very much in the bubble, didn't really know anybody outside of who wasn't an evangelical Christian. Like, I really didn't. Literally everyone I knew was a hardline right-winger, evangelical, you know. I didn't think anything of it. Now it's like, oh my God, that's fucking insane. But anyway, this was me rambling on about shit, so. Continuing on at the article. seated in front of me was a man with a shirt and with two guns crossed over each other with the words, "Born to protect the Second Amendment." Another hat said, "All aboard the Trump train." There were MAGA hats and shirts and even a MAGA spinoff, "Make America Godly Again," by electing a person who doesn't have a single godly bone in his body. Ah, yes. Very smart thinking, you know. Mr. Grab him by the poppy. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, the guy who, known for his, cheating on his spouses. You know, the guy who doesn't know the Bible at all. The man who does whose entire life is a living repudiation of everything preached about in the Bible, you know, that the Bible says you should do. Yeah, you know, that's how we make America godly again. By electing a man like that. Donald J. Trump. Donald Jesus Trump. I'm certain that's what the J stands for. I mean, it has to be. I mean, what else could it mean? He's God's chosen one. Obviously. Okay, continuing on before I continue on my little snark fest. There were Jesus shirts with Bible verses, patriotic shirts with the stars and stripes, and lots of shirts that blended too. Despite Greg Locke insisting that he is not tied to either party, I sure didn't see a Biden shirt in the crowd, only Jesus and Trump. Well, that's because Joe Biden is a God-hating communist, you see. He hates America and he hates Jesus. No, sir, you can't be a good Christian. It's impossible to be a Christian and a commie. You support, you know, those commie Democrats. Yep. I support one party only, and it's Jesus' party. The party of Reagan. Yeah, sure. The GOP, the Republicans. Yeah, sure. None of that Democrat stuff. Just saying. Ever notice that the logo is of a biblical donkey? There's a reason for it. I'm sorry. I need to stop. I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'm sorry. I need to stop. Anyway. And I appeared to be the only one with a mask. Feeling a little like the kid who was told it was a costume party when it really wasn't. As sweat began to drip a little in the summer heat of the circus tent, ushers handed out fans with the words, "Fan the flame of revival," on them. Slides scrolled on to screens announcing an Iron Man event for men and other retreats and upcoming events. One of them is a visit from Christian worship leader Sean I have no idea how to pronounce his last name. You know what? I genuinely don't give a shit because this man is a fucking piece of shit. Foached? We're going to go with Foached or whatever I come up with at the moment. Sean Foached. Who has embraced the title given him by Rolling Stone magazine. Jesus Christ. Oh my gosh. I missed this when I first read the article. Or maybe it's just reading it out loud. This makes it funny. I'm not sure what. Oh, that's good. Oh my god. Okay, sorry. I'm trying to get it out. Jesus Christ super spreader. So, for those who don't know, he's a fucking piece of shit. Who this entire pandemic, even back during the lockdowns last year, went around the country, giving the lockdowns an F you, holding concerts and worship services in the middle of the, you know, out in public, you know, where everyone could see, to say, because, you know, apparently lockdowns were done for the purpose of silencing the church, you see. You see, the reason why we locked down the country wasn't because, you know, there was this deadly pandemic, and they were trying to, you know, help save people's lives. No, you see, the reason that they actually did it, you see, that was just a cover, you see. That's just what they claimed to do it for, you know, it was just a cover. The real reason is that they needed to shut up the people of God, you know, the true warriors of God, you know, muzzle the church. See, that's the true reason for doing it. You see, COVID is just fake, and, you know, we're just doing it, you know, and this is just, and, you know, we're just getting too scared, you know. The power of God is coming too powerful in this country. And so Satan is doing, throwing everything at the wall to, you know, to silence God's people. Because you see, America is God's country, you know, where we, you know, where we push to sterilize trans, for sterilized trans people, where we dream of pushing gay people off of buildings, where we're trying to make ensure women have no rights, you know, where we're trying to be the American Taliban. Yeehaw, you see, the only problem with the Taliban, is that they serve the wrong, you know, the religion, you know. If the Taliban were just Christians, it'd be perfect, you know? Because you see, we're actually kind of based, you know? We have the right ideas, you know? It's just unfortunately we believe in Allah instead of Yahweh. Which is kind of a shame, you know? And by the way, I'm actually not joking. This is actually something that Christian conservatives actually are now saying. I think Lauren Chen did so. Nick Fuentes. I think Candace Owens even said that the Taliban were based and that they were doing good things, you know? You know, so like, they actually do like the Taliban. They just, you know, don't like them because they Muslim instead of Christian. So make no mistake, these people would absolutely are very much, you know, like when I call these people, you know, the Christian, the American Taliban or White ISIS or Y'al-Qaeda, it's not really much of a joke. Like, the only thing that's keeping him in place and from doing it is the military, you know. They ain't gonna do shit, you know. If you know, a bunch of guns come rolling in to stop them. That's the only thing that's stopping them from doing the stuff that the Taliban are doing in Afghanistan. Anyway, continuing on. Anyway, so Jesus Christ Super Spreader priding himself off of maskless revival services. Even stooping to sell Super Spreader t-shirts on his website. Because nothing better than celebrating the fact that you have caused the deaths of hundreds of people. You know, Jesus must be proud of you, Sean. He's going up to your thing saying, you know, that man, true follower of mine, a true servant of mine, recklessly killing hundreds of people in my name. So proud of you, Sean. So proud of you. Okay. Continuing on, we really need to continue on. I'm spending way too much time on these sarcastic comments. Sean would be joining Greg for a Big Ten American Revival on August 28th. More on that later. Worship kicked off with songs very familiar to me, what we used to call contemporary worship back in the 1990s. Sorry, with a few classic hymns thrown in, like How Great Thou Art. Worship leaders were young and hip. One of them had a hat on that said The Edge, which I assumed was a wink at U2 guitarist The Edge. But I'm always cautious when it comes to pop culture references, as my wife says I am not hip as hip as I think I sometimes am. She also informed me that Edge is also a professional wrestler. Hey, Shane, quick note. I'm with you. If I had seen that, I would have assumed it was a U2 reference. Just saying. I've never heard of The Edge, the professional wrestler, until now. So, nothing I've seen so far surprising me to me. Even the guys who had guns strapped to for hips as they worshipped the Prince of Peace. I expected all that. Here's what was surprising, and I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say it, even though it may ruffle a few left-leaning feathers. I understand why people are drawn to Mr. Locke. He entered the room, giving away hugs and high fives with an authenticity that shocked me. From the moment he entered the room, he had a down-to-earthiness about him that lasted until the last person left the service. I watched as people showed him photos of her children, as he prayed with grown men in tears, and as he waited in the heat until the last person in line had a chance to talk with him, including me. He genuinely seemed to care for his people, as he said, perhaps unknowingly quoting Pope Francis. He was a shepherd that smelled like his sheep. Here's the thing that I noticed from a lot of leftist Christians, especially those who never grew up in right-wing evangelical circles or just right-wing circles at all, you know. They just assume that, you know, these American evangelical preachers, you know, even the most hateful ones, you know, who say, fuck like Black Lives Matter, you know, Black Lives, if you support Black Lives Matter, you're a communist, you know, gay people should, you know, kill themselves, you know, all that shit, you know, even those people, they genuinely care about their flock. There's a reason why a lot of people are drawn to evangelicalism, because evangelicalism provides community. It provides a family. You actually feel as if you belong. Like, I never did, you know. I was way too different. You know. But I witnessed it in many other people. Like, it's something that even if I never felt a part of, you know. Because, you know, I always knew that, you know, there was no way I could ever come out, you know, as who I was. In those circles, you know, like, even before I knew there was a word for who I was, you know, which is trans, you know, like, I always knew that I, you know, wanted to be a girl, but, like, even back then, you know, I knew that that would not be something that would go over well, you know, so, like, I never felt at home or part of the family, but it's something I witnessed in everybody else, which made it a lot more painful for me, was that everyone else did feel like they were part of a genuine family. Like, evangelicalism promotes community. It's all about creating community. You know, I have never seen anybody that cares for other people more than an evangelical church. You know, like, I have seen so many, like, I remember so many times, you know, my family being the recipients of casseroles and soups, you know, people bringing us food, you know, when we were, like, super sick or whatever, you know. I remember, having lice for several weeks, you know. It took us forever to get rid of the lice, and people were constantly bringing us food, you know, why we couldn't go to church or even go out at all. And I also remember making food for others, you know, people who, you know, found out they had cancer, you know, people whose parents, you know, ended up in the hospital, you know, just shit like that, you know. Prayer services for very specific people, you know. Like, they would get the church together and pray over very specific people if something really big happened to them, good or bad. Evangelicalism creates community better than I've seen anything else in my life. There's a reason why people are drawn to it. And these pastors, they genuinely do care about their people. It's genuine. Sure, they hate everyone who's not in, doesn't look like them, which is, you know, white, middle class, and up, you know. But they care about their flock. They deeply do. And it's just amazing to me how so many lifelong lefties, you know, or liberals or whatever, you know, genuinely don't understand this. Like, they genuinely believe that if you hate, you know, everyone who doesn't look like you, then you basically hate your own flock. You know, like, these pastors who promote hatred, you know, that they hate their own flock. Not true. No, they love them. Like, there is a lot of love going around in these churches. Love for everyone in that church. Now, it also creates hatred for everyone outside of those walls, you know, especially people who don't look like them. But there is a lot of love that goes around in these churches, you know, from the pastor to the congregation and backward, and, you know, from the congregation to the pastor. It's a genuine family. Like, evangelical churches are a family. If you become a part of a conservative evangelical church, I mean, from the day you walk in, you know, most likely you're going to be a part of that family. You know, if you start introducing yourself, you know, or getting involved with the people, you're part of the family. I mean, it's really that simple. And that's what draws people to this. Anyway, continuing on with this article. As Mr. Locke took the stage to the song "Ark, War Cry is Praise," his opening words stirred the crowd. "Protesters ain't gonna stop us. Vandalism's not gonna stop us. Death threats are not gonna stop us." He started with some in-house stuff before the sermon, for property had been vandalized on Saturday night again. Apparently that night before, when they had Roger Stone visit as a guest quote-unquote preacher. Yes, you know, but you know, you're not partisan, Greg Locke, you know. You only have Roger Stone. Not partisan at all. Okay, continue on. Among the graffiti messages and property damage, someone wrote, "Your lies cost lives," on the wall, and "F you" on the pulpit. And Mr. Locke was livid. For me, it was the latest reminder of how unhelpful tactics like that are, even if I can understand the anger behind them. Hate only fuels the fire of hatred, or in this case, it adds conviction to the idea that there's a persecution of Christians coming like the world has never seen. Yeah, exactly, people. Please don't do this shit. Don't vandalize these churches. Don't harass them. Don't send in death threats. Don't do this. You're only making them stronger in their convictions. You're only harming your own cause. For the love of God, people, please don't do this. Continuing on. Locke cleverly took the FU and spun it on his head, saying that it now stands for fired up. And even his biblical mandate to forgive you, which he tossed to the cameras as if the culprit were watching. He took back the FU from the one who sprayed it. This was one of the first times I smiled, despite my most determined attempts not to. Good thing I had my mask on. You know, if he wasn't doing this for such a despicable reason, you know, which is, you know, his entitlement to kill other people, this would be biblical. Like, notice, and I want you to notice this trend. He's doing something that seems very biblical. That on its face is extremely biblical, because like this is something that you know you could almost see like a you know like one of you know like Paul doing like you know taking these negative messages and spinning them around for something good. But why is he doing this? Oh, because he wants to do maskless services and spread COVID around and wants to promote Christian nationalism, which isn't biblical. So notice how close, just howsoever fucking close, this is to the gospel. Notice that. So ever close. And if you don't know better, you could think that he is doing the biblical thing. That what he's doing is the Christ-like thing, if you don't know any better. I just want you to take notice of that. Still, in his pre-sermon remarks, Mr. Locke built up an anticipation as he announced a major decision that they are making as a church. My nose is super stuffed up. They are about to upgrade to an enormous 3,000-person church. I mean, tent, my God. Upgrade to an enormous 3,000-person tent. Massive burst of applause. But parking was an issue, so they're also purchasing all the land in the immediate area. 9 acres, which would be used for parking, giving them a total of 16 acres. They were ready to sign the deal for $1 million and had 2 weeks to raise it. They were ready to sign the deal for $1 million and had... Oh, sorry. I just read that. Why am I reading it again? They had 2 weeks to raise it. This is when I began to realize that this is very different from the snake handling churches, which are a dying denomination, no pun intended. They're dwindling out like an old campfire, but this thing seemed to be taking off like the wildfires out west, and had potential to do its own unimaginable damage. Mr. Locke made it clear that we are not all about money or extravagant spending, and I believe him on that one. After all, we don't even have a building, only a tent. He told the endearing story of an event that he just spoke at that took up a love offering of $10,000 for him, which he committed to donate to the church as the first offering gift of the morning. I found myself smiling again as he gave a little jab to the televangelists and the millionaire pastors with their Lear jets, as he mentioned his rented house and joked about his 1992 Bubba truck. As he described his philosophy on honorariums for speaking, I found it uncomfortably similar to my own. He doesn't have a price, and seems to believe that there is something wrong with charging a bunch of money to preach about a man who tells us to give it all away. As if that were not enough, he celebrated a bishop from India who was visiting and happened to be sitting in front of me. He had the bishop who founded 10 churches in India stand, and Greg announced that he felt God compelling him to tithe from the $1 million they were raising for the parking lot. They would be giving $100,000 to the bishop. He said it with what seemed to be genuine tears in his eyes. Notice again. So what did I just say in the previous paragraph? Two paragraphs, God, not sure which, you know. What was going on? They were doing something that seemed very biblical, and if you didn't know better, you would think was the biblical mandate. Now look what happened here. He got $10,000 for speaking somewhere. He knows Jesus is teaching to give everything away, that you are not to be keeping this shit. So what does he do? He does what Jesus tells him to do, which is give it away. He gave it as the first love offering to the church. $10,000 is not to be coughed at. Like, he gave away a healthy sum, people. $10,000. He gave it away. He gave it away as a love offering. And then, you know, when they're raising up funds for his own church to, you know, for the parking lot, they gave away $100,000 to a bishop in India who founded 10 churches there. Once again, see, it's pretty damn biblical. Until you remember that this is a Christian nationalist. And all of this, that, you know, everything that he's using this money for is to promote Christian nationalism, which is not the gospel. In fact, it's the opposite of the gospel. So once again, something that on the face of its face value is something very biblical. And that if you don't know better, would think of it as him doing the biblical thing. Because I mean, it is, but it's also not. So notice once again, just how fucking close Greg Locke's Christian nationalism is to the gospel. How it's so close. Just so fucking close. And yet so far away at the same time. So just notice that, people. This is different than the Christian nationalism of the past. I mean, whatever Christian nationalist or evangelical does this shit. I mean, seriously, whatever one. This is a new Christian nationalism, as Shane is about to explain. This is a brand new Christian nationalism. One that is ever so closer to the gospel. Because that's how this all works. The point, the best lie is the one that's the closest to the truth. The best lies are always the closest to the truth. And that's what we're seeing here. This is why people like Greg Locke are taking off like nothing. Because His lie is so fucking close to the truth. If you don't know, if you have don't have any discernment whatsoever, you're gonna fall for it. Continuing on at this article. But then came discernment. It began in Exodus, with the story of God rescuing the Hebrew slaves from their bondage to Pharaoh, Exodus 14. I'm very familiar with this iconic story, which has inspired so many enslaved and oppressed people over the centuries. But it was uncomfortable to hear it in the context of an audience that is 99% white, and who seem convinced that they are victims of an oppressive empire, persecuted by the federal government under the leadership of a pharaoh named Biden. Several times he mentioned running Joe Biden and the Democrats out of the revival tent if they showed up. Because you see, the Christ-like thing to do is not preach the gospel to them, but run them out. Definitely sounds like the Christ-like thing to do. Okay, continuing on. And I believed him, though not convinced they'd make it out alive. He's talking about Joe Biden and the quote-unquote Democrats. He doesn't think they'd make it out alive, which is true. Just as God hardened the heart of Pharaoh, Locke continued, so God continues to harden hearts. Of course, he named names: Biden, Pelosi, Cuomo is out, Newsom is next. He shouted with a kick of the leg. But remember, Greg Locke is not partisan, you see. He is not partisan. You know, he just does all this shit. Continuing on. Multiple times, Mr. Locke claimed that the election was stolen and that Trump won. In his words, that doesn't make me a terrorist, that makes me a truther. Immediately after saying the left hates the church, he unconvincingly assured everyone he is not a partisan. Republicans and Democrats are two heads of the same snake. My loyalty is to Jesus. Trump won, who's stolen from him. Joe Biden is a Democrat, he's a pharaoh, who's trying to persecute the church. The left hates the church, I just love how you pretend that progressive Christianity is not a thing. That if you are a leftist, you can't be a Christian, you're working against the gospel somehow. I just love that. Like, right-wing evangelicals, like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, right-wing evangelicals genuinely do not believe that it's possible to be on the left and be a Christian. They genuinely do not believe that's possible. Like, my grandpa on my mom's side, I mean, I haven't even told my own family that I'm a leftist yet. Like, they all still think that I'm a hardcore libertarian, and I gladly pretend to be one for their sake, because to be honest, I don't really want to fight with them over it. It's hard to tell my grandpa, yeah, I'm a fucking Christian communist. Or I don't even say that, just, I voted for Joe Biden. My grandpa would tell me straight to my face, I am not a Christian. It's impossible to be one. And he told me that, like, I believed that for many years, because my grandpa was very strong on that. It is impossible to vote for a Democrat and be a Christian, because you're voting against your own values. Because they genuinely believe that Democrats stand against everything that Christianity stands for, and therefore it is possible to do it. That you're showing by your actions that you are not a Christian. So you can say all you want, I am a Christian, and be a leftist, but they will never believe you. They will see you as the enemy. They will see you as an atheist. To them, that's who you are, especially if you're a Marxist. So, like, if they, continuing on. He went even further to placate those who might be concerned that his presence at Trump rallies or the January 6th insurrection crossed the line and politicized Christianity. I ain't never got up at a political rally and preached about Donald Trump. I preach about Jesus. Jesus, Jesus. He's the sweetest name I know. The place exploded and my head was spinning. And it just happens to be that Donald Trump is the second sweetest name you know. Continuing on. This is where I began to identify a few distinctive ways this Delta variant of Christian, quote-unquote, nationalism diverged from its predecessors. Let's call it the New American Revival, since that's the language many of them use. The incongruities they are attempting to hold together, like opposing magnets, are impossible to reconcile. I'll name three of them. First, the New American Revival insists that it is not partisan, but that it is all about Jesus, even as they simultaneously say that Democrats are demonic and Trump is God's messenger. That's the first thing that hit me as very different from most previous iterations of the religious right. They were unabashedly embedded to GOP, and most of them didn't even deny their partisanship, despite glaring contradictions between the values of Jesus and those of Trump. I think back to Jerry Falwell Jr. in 2018, where a reporter pressed Falwell to reconcile his fidelity to Jesus and to Trump. This was his response. I don't look to the teachings of Jesus for what my political beliefs should be. The New American Revival genuinely seems to be delusional or in denial about his partisan bias. I went to Greg's service fully prepared for a Trump rally, which it was, but I was not prepared for it to simultaneously be a Jesus rally. I remember watching Trump speak a few years ago at Falwell's University, one of the largest evangelical schools in the country, hardly even mentioning the name of Jesus as he made his infamous reference to 2 Corinthians. In the recent past, it's not unusual to hear Trump evangelicals speak at churches without even mentioning the name of Jesus a single time. I noted one 12-minute sermon by Trump evangelist Mark Burns where he mentions Trump's name 20 times without once uttering the name of Jesus. That's incredible. That is fucking incredible. And just shows you that the previous Christian nationalism was all about the GOP. It was all about Trump. It was never about Jesus. The new Christian nationalism, for finding a way to merge the two. Make it about both. Which in the end means that it's only about Trump, don't get me wrong. Because you can only serve one master. It's impossible to serve two masters. You know, you're either choosing Jesus or the other. The Bible makes that clear. It's either Jesus or the other. You can't have both. And so, you know, they're choosing Trump at the end of the day, don't get me wrong, but by making it a lot about Jesus, the lines are blurred. As opposed to the previous nationalism, where it was clearly all about Trump. The new nationalism is finding a way to blur the lines. Continuing to go on, I'll continue the article. Not so with this New American Revival. They seem to be convinced that their love for Jesus can be easily merged with right-wing politics and conspiracy theories. Though it is noteworthy that the text of the sermon did not come from the Gospels. At one point, Mr. Locke even mentioned the red letters of the gospel, referring to the words of Jesus. To the words of Jesus, often highlighted in red, for which the movement I am part of is named, Red Letter Christians. This is what makes the Delta variant even more confusing and dangerous than its predecessors. For years, my friends and I have insisted that mixing Christian faith with a political party is like mixing ice cream with cow manure. It doesn't do much damage to the manure, but it sure does mess up the ice cream. In fact, they co-authored an entire book entitled Jesus for Presidents on the very theme. Very good book, by the way. Please read it. This is me, Anna, saying that, not Shane. Okay, me as Anna. Like, read the fucking book, please. Jesus for President is fucking amazing. It's eye-opening, but anyway, you can see it in the article. More recently, it seems clear to most people that Jesus and Trump are like opposing magnets. You can't hold them together no matter how hard you try. I'm still convinced of that. But this new Delta variant of Christian nationalism, quote-unquote, Christian quotes, led by folks like Greg Locke and Sean Foyt, sure hinges on the hope that opposites attract. The problem is that every mention of Jesus seems to be by name only, turning Jesus into a mascot rather than a model for life. Or to paraphrase George Bernard Shaw, just as God created us in his image, we decided to return to favor. That's how you end up with a version of Jesus that prefers an AR-15 to an overhead cross. It becomes nearly impossible to actually reconcile the teaching of Jesus with the policies and rhetoric of Trump defenders. It's hard to obey Christ's command to love our enemies and simultaneously prepare to kill them, despite having crosses and guns in the same big or tent revival. And it's hard to imagine any version of faith that centers the great commandment of love thy neighbor as thyself, but does not translate into wearing a mask in a pandemic to protect the most vulnerable among us. This is also what makes the new Delta variant much more dangerous than its original form of quote-unquote Christian nationalism. Greg jumped from scripture to politics without missing a beat. It's amazing how accurate the Bible is for where we are living at this very second. He shouted it out. Let my people go. Let my people go. That seemed to be a familiar war cry for Greg. They, quote unquote, are coming for us. But God will deliver us just like God delivered the Hebrew people. God will deliver us from communism and from the liberal agenda. There is a book called Exodus because they found the exit sign and they got out, he said. And so can we. Bridging the centuries from Exodus to 2021 requires some theological gymnastics, but the parallels were not the least bit subtle. Greg, Mr. Locke, pointed out that God led the Israelites to a specific place where they were to camp, through a stuttering prophet with nothing more than a hickory stick. Then he boldly claimed the tent and the hill God had called them to in Mount Juliet, Tennessee. This would be the refuge. The obvious stretch was seeing things like mask mandates as religious persecution, but America's idolatry of individual rights over the common good has made fertile ground to see any inconvenience as persecution. I've often thought, wouldn't it be great if churches were the last places to reopen because of how obsessed we are with loving our neighbors and protecting the elite, the most vulnerable? While masks were not an issue in the Bible, loving your neighbor and protecting the vulnerable is one of the Bible's most consistent themes. Pastor Greg Locke sees it pretty differently. Referring to the Israelites in Exodus who considered going back to Egypt, Greg made it clear. They would rather die as slaves than live as free people. I can promise you one thing. I'm not gonna die free before I ever die a slave to the government. Here's where I saw a second distinguishing mark of this new Delta variant of Christian nationalism. Faith over fear. We are all about celebrating faith over fear, as the words on the banner in front of Global Vision proclaimed in all caps. And yet it is fueled by apocalyptic end times theology and is convinced that there is imminent persecution coming, like the world has never seen, and mask mandates are just the beginning. Multiple times, Mr. Locke mentioned how it was begun down as a lockdown of public worship services during the pandemic. It's just a foretaste of what is to come. What we are getting ready to see is not a lockdown, but a shutdown. The government is going to try to shut down the church. On Twitter, Greg put it plainly. We have a First Amendment right to worship. If that's impeded on, we will invoke our Second Amendment right to meet you at the door. We will not be bullied. To be clear, that's a fact, not a threat. Hence the guns. Greg certainly set himself up to walk in the line of in the lineage of Moses, leading them out of the empire with nothing more than a hickory stick. He put it like this. I have a choice as a shepherd. I can protect the sheep, or I can open the gates to the wolves and let them all go to the slaughter. I can warn you and protect you and love you, sometimes have to shear you, or I can put down my stick down and let the wolves devour you and take your kids. The irony is hard to miss, though. Choosing faith over fear means refusing to wear a mask as God will protect you, but you still need a gun. And I don't need to speculate about whether people had guns in the service last Sunday. I saw them. They were hard to miss. Understand, you know, you don't need to protect yourself from COVID, but you need to protect yourself against some scary black people and against the communist governments. You see, Jesus will protect you from COVID, but he won't protect you from the communists or the black people or the immigrants, you know, or the homeless, you know. Those scary people God won't protect you from. Too much for God. Not too much for me and my AR-15, but too much for God. But COVID, you know, which is invisible, God will protect me from that. All right, continuing on. Just as Trump and Jesus feel like opposing clear opposing forces, like magnets that push against each other, so are the forces of love and fear. As a committed Christian, I am convinced that perfect love casts out fear, as Scripture promises. We have a choice as individuals and as a country between love and fear. When fear motivates us, as is happening on so many policy issues like guns and immigration, we do really terrible things. And any theology that is fueled by fear rather than love is bound to be toxic. The compelling force at work in this new American revival seems to be that they're coming for us. It is not a coincidence that this new Delta variant of nationalistic theology comes on the back of the first black president, a racial justice awakening in the Black Lives Matter movement, and the changing demographics of Congress and our country in general. Some folks like Tucker Carlson are less subtle about their fears of immigrants replacing, quote-unquote, us. Or as the Unite the Right marchers in Charlottesville said, Jews will not replace us. There is a white fear, white fragility, and white nostalgia that is the underlying force behind much of the current theology and policies. But that fear gets covered up by a militant masculine battle call. Many say it will say it's about freedom, but it's really about power. And on the back of one of those the greatest racial awakenings since the 1960s, equality can feel like persecution to those who have been the privileged to hold the power. Many of those who say make America great again are really saying make America white again. White evangelicals are losing power, and it is what Donald Trump promised to change, and in many ways delivered on. It is also what the devil tempted Jesus with, all the power of the world. As much as any folk will insist that they are choosing faith over fear, perhaps the real choice is between fear and love. Perfect love casts out fear. As I listen to American revivalists, I hear a lot about fear, but not as much about love. At least not the love I see embodied in Jesus and displayed on the cross, a love so powerful that I would rather die than kill. That's the thing. What are the two greatest commandments, as said by Jesus? Love. You know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and all your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Love. Literally, love. That's not something that these churches talk about. They can't talk about it. Because if they did talk about love, if it was fear versus love, which is the way it's supposed to be, that is the biblical way of looking at the dichotomy of fear, what the opposite of fear is, which is love. Maybe that's a change. They couldn't be white nationalists anymore. They couldn't hate black people. They wouldn't be able to hate immigrants. They wouldn't hate queer people. They wouldn't hate the homeless. But they don't want to do that. So what they choose instead is to pretend that faith is the opposite of fear instead of love. And they never talk about love and their sermons outside of a marriage context. And make sure it's between two white people, please, you know. Don't want to have any of that interracial disgustingness, you know. I mean, did you know that here in America today, 2021, about almost a quarter, I think it's like 20, at least 20%, if not 25%, like I think it's 20% of Americans still think that interracial marriage is disgusting, that it should be outlawed, and it is a sin against God and nature. Yeah, 2021. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers. And yet, racism is dead. Mm-hmm, sure. Okay, continuing on. Because we have been going on for a really, really long fucking time, and my voice, and it's actually, and like my voice box, I can feel my throat is starting to get numb from talking, so. Actually, a lot of my body parts are getting numb. Including my nether regions. Okay, finally, the last distinctive contradiction I recognize as I attended Global Vision and as I looked at the new American revival is this. They love America, but hate the government. With the not-so-subtle parallel of Pharaoh's pursuits of the Israelites, Greg made it clear that the government forces, the helicopters, and the tanks are coming for the church. Huge soldiers, trained military assassins, were sent to destroy the people of God by the wicked government leader, Pharaoh, or Biden. And now they are coming for us. Just as Pharaoh had chariots and horses pursuing the escaping slaves, the federal government has tanks and helicopters, and they are coming for the church. No, but they are coming for immigrants. You know, they are using that shit to chase down immigrants and Black Lives Matter protesters, but, you know, you don't want to talk about that. Continuing on. In the words of the Greg Locke, if you're coming to attack the church this year like never before, not locked down, but please shut down. Wake the crap up. If you're going to shut down churches in this country, it's not going to be lockdowns, it's going to be lockups. If you will roll helicopters and tanks up into this parking lot. He went on to talk about a new initiative of Homeland Security to track domestic terrorists like the people responsible for the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th. Mr. Locke not only denied the insurrection, as many extreme right-wing conspiracy theorists do, but he also defended it. According to Mr. Locke, January 6th was not an insurrection, he goes. I was there. I am not ashamed I was there. I'm not apologizing that I was there. And he was also surprised that Homeland Security is monitoring domestic terrorism and white supremacist religious extremism. This, too, is a divergence from much conservative evangelicalism, which often quotes Romans 13 to say that all of the authority is established by God and needs to be respected. In many ways, it has been used to give a blank check to the government. Jeff Sessions used it to justify putting kids in cages on the border, and Trump apologist Robert Jeffress used it to say that Robert Jeffress used it to say that Trump had God-ordained authority to use any amount of violence he wants to, including nuclear weapons. But this new Delta variant is more suspicious of government. Perhaps that's just because of who is in the White House right now. There's little talk about submitting to the authorities and a whole lot of talking about going to jail and refusing to comply with federal mask orders. Let me pause to say that I'm a firm believer in the rich tradition of civil disobedience. As St. Augustine said, an unjust law is no law at all. It is as much our duty to disobey the bad laws as it is to obey the good ones. Our country has been shaped by civil disobedience, from the Boston Tea Party to the Underground Railroad. If a law is unjust, Thomas Jefferson said, a man has not only right to disobey it, but he is obligated to do so. And people of faith in particular have a rich history of going to jail for Jesus. The Bible is a subversive book, after all, filled with folk who confronted the powers that be. Yes, Moses told Pharaoh, let my people go. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into the fiery furnace for defying royal orders. Daniel ignored the orders of King Darius and was tossed into a den of lions. The early Christians were called enemies of the state by the Romans, and many followers of Jesus accused of defying Caesar's decrees. Few were jailed and martyred. Jesus himself was executed by the state. So Christians at our best have always had a precarious relationship of power. I stand in the great tradition of holy troublemakers like Dorothy Day, Martin Luther King Jr., Daniel Berrigan, Rosa Parks, Franz Jagersauter, I'm guessing that's how it's pronounced, I don't know, I don't know how to pronounce German, Harriet Tubman, and Sojourner Truth, all of whom broke bad laws. I'm no stranger to handcuffs myself. I'm proud to say that I lost track of my arrest somewhere after 20. Along with dozens of my Christian friends, I've gone to jail for defying anti-homeless laws, calling our legislators to take action on gun violence, challenging our current immigration policies, standing against the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, putting our bodies into ways of executions. Every time we go to jail, as the legend John Lewis used to say, we smile at our mugshots because we know we are on the right side of history. One of our most effective arguments in court has been we are simply exercising our religious freedom. We've argued that feeding the homeless, providing sanctuary for refugees, and putting water in the desert for immigrants are all essential acts of our faith. And we have won in court over and over. See, this is this is religious freedom. This is religious freedom. It's not using it to kick gay people out of your business or, you know, or discriminating against black people for whatever reason. No, it's, I don't know, to do the things Jesus actually did. You know, Provide sanctuary for refugees. Feed the homeless. That's religious freedom. Not discriminate against gay people. Take note, right-wing evangelicals. That's what religious freedom actually is. Not your bastardization of that term. Continuing on. I believe in religious freedom, and I am committed to continuing to defy the government policies that violate my faith. But quarantine restrictions are not among them. The role of governing authorities is to protect people, and in the case of quarantine restrictions, that is exactly what our government is trying to do. When the policies of our government are destructive of life, we should defy them. When the policies of our government are protecting life, we should respect them. As for the First Amendment, James Madison, the father of the Constitution, once said, "Liberty may be endangered by the abuse of liberty. One person's freedom can encroach on another person's right to live." Mask mandates are not about religious freedom. They are about neighborly love. More important than the First Amendment, as important as it is the Great Commandment, which calls us to love our neighbors as ourselves. I'm all about the good trouble and revolutionary love. One of the things I cling to from my evangelical upbringing is a willingness to protest things that are wrong. After all, half of the word Protestant is protest, and our history is filled with it. So at face value, I love Greg's fire. We don't escape this without some jail time, without some fines, without some bruises and scars. We are not going back to Egypt, we are going forward. When they put us in jail, we'll go forward. When they sue us, we'll go forward. But then, as all good things can be distorted by the devil, who is always a liar, it starts sounding like the Bundy militia in Oregon, especially as he begins to point back to the Texan Exodus. When all hell breaks loose, and it will, there will be a place of refuge right here under this tent. Right here. Just as God protected the Israelites from Pharaoh's army, so God will protect the faithful remnant of the church from the American government. He ended the sermon with an awkward pivot to praise America, a reminder that this is certainly a version of American nationalism. But it's not your grandparents' version. The new revivalists love a romantic, mythical idea of America, but they are fully prepared to confront the police or the National Guard like we saw on January 6th. That's what makes this version of patriotism so peculiar, as we remember the Capitol Police beaten bloody with the American flag in hand. The whole world is counting on America right now, because when America falls, we are the last bastion of freedom and capitalism. Our friends all around the world are counting on America to stand and fight for what God gave us, because the government gave me none of it. God gave me all of it, said John Locke. Greg Locke, I mean. I know many folks will discount this new American revival as something that we should not pay much attention to, like a snake handling church in West Virginia. But I'm convinced that this militarized Delta variant of Christian nationalism is one of the most dangerous threats to both democracy and Orthodox Christianity. It is not just a fringe movement. It is a new American revival, and there are thousands of people who are fanning the flames of this revival. Yeah, and the reason for this, by the way, is simply because it is so fucking close to the truth, as we saw really early on in this article. How much of it is so fucking close to the truth? It looks like Christianity. You have to have some pretty strong discernment to recognize it's not. Anyway, continuing on the article. Some will say that Mr. Locke is just a performer in a tent. To that I offer Greg's own response to NPR when he was asked if sometimes he gets caught up and carried away in that moment, saying things he didn't mean to say. His response, "I don't get caught up in the moment. What I say creates the moment." He knows what he is doing. I am convinced that this new American revival's potential to create many more moments, quote-unquote, like January 6th. Let us never forget it to people who lost their lives that day. And they were not just Trump flags at the Capitol as blood was shed. There were also Jesus flags and Confederate flags. And when the insurrectionists took over the Capitol and stood in the Senate chamber, this is the prayer we prayed, led by the QAnon shaman with the Viking horns. "Thank you, Heavenly Father, for gracing us with this opportunity," removes horns, "to stand up for our God-given unalienable rights. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for being the inspiration needed to the police officers to allow us into the building, to allow us to exercise our rights, to allow us to send a message to all the tyrants, the communists, and the globalists that this is our nation, not theirs. that we will not allow America, the American way, the United States of America, to go down. Thank you, divine omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent Creator God, for filling this chamber with your white light and love, your white light of harmony. Thank you for filling this chamber of patriots that love you and love Christ. Thank you for allowing the United States of America to be reborn. Thank you for allowing us to get rid of the communists, the globalists, and the traitors within our government. We love you and we thank you. In Christ's holy name, we pray. Amen. That is, just as a reminder, what the QAnon shaman prayed when they took over the Capitol. Sitting there last Sunday morning, I thought to myself with a heavy heart. The QAnon shaman's prayer on January 6th could serve as the liturgy of the new American revival. But it is a dangerous liturgy, a deadly theology, a blasphemous distortion of Christian faith. And it is a danger to our democracy. When I met Greg after the service, he was very kind, even as he told me that he recognized me. I confess to him that I am very disturbed by many of the things he says. In the spirit of Matthew 18, where Jesus says that if a brother or sister is missing the mark, we are to talk directly with them. That is why I came to the service. I made sure he knew that I had no allegiance to either party. I did not endorse Trump or Biden. I've thrown all my chips in with Jesus. It is my love for Jesus that causes me to be concerned about what is happening under the big red and white tent there. He grabbed me and gave me a hug. I gave him my cell phone number and I told him I'd like to talk and to pray. Anyway, I felt like this was an important article to read. So we all know what's coming. Because this is the new form of Christian nationalism that we are going to see an uptick in. Especially because, okay, I mean, most of the people who are listening to this podcast are between the ages of 28 and 45, okay? Most of you who are listening are between that age. AKA old as fuck. Sorry, I couldn't even say, look, I'm 22, okay? I'm allowed to call you old as fuck. Because, you know, because at this age, I'll never be that age. But, you know, like, most of you are between that age. You're right in the age where you're going to be facing this constantly in your life. This is a Christian nationalism that you're going to see spread like wildfire during your time. You're going to have to face this. You know, the people who are older than that, you know, you might see it to an extent, but especially the older you get, I'm going to die off before it becomes a big thing, you know? And the few people who are around my age or younger, the very few who are listening to this podcast, we are definitely going to be facing this our whole fucking lives. This is our generational battle. I think we need to talk about this before it gets too big, so we can understand it, understand what it is we are up against. What is, you know, now pretending to be the new Christian movement. Anyway, this podcast has been going on for so fucking long. We need to get this over with, so we're going to end with a good news story, like usual. We're always going to end with a good news story, people. It doesn't matter how long the episode is gone. Unless I absolutely have to stop the episode, but anyway. Like usual, our good news story is from Good News Network. Baking Bad. Ex-cons are mentored as bakers in Ever Bread is in the best restaurants. A bakery run by a Cambridge student is teaching ex-cons new skills, including providing bread to some of Scotland's fanciest restaurants. Freedom Bakery in Glasgow's East End provides well-known eateries, including Ubiquitous Chip, with bread rolls. The social enterprise was set up by Matt Fountain, who grew up watching his stepfather struggle to establish a life after being released from jail in Kent, and who he visited in prison aged 12 and begged to never to go again. Matt enrolled in university courses in Manchester, studied history of art in London, spent a year in Glasgow, and attended Cambridge. He returned to Glasgow and had a chance to do a PhD at Oxford, but opted not to. Said he decided to invest his time and energy into helping people, including convicted murderers, reintegrate into society. In 2014, he was granted permission to use a small kitchen in HMP Low Moss, Glasgow. Matt planned to make and sell bread at the same time, put those prisoners through a recognized qualification for the baking industry. SVQ level 2 in craft baking. By 2017, he was working with Preston Arson Notorious Barlini. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. And pairing them with qualified bakers in order to help him maintain a qualification. Trainee bakeries have a broad variety of backgrounds, and mass employees are given training in self-defense due to working with prisoners. There are currently 16 employees, and a third were recruited from jails. Matt said it is a mixture of long-term and short-term sentences, including drugs-related offenses, fraud, and I'm afraid to say manslaughter and murder. Matt felt out of place in Cambridge and failed to find enjoyment in it. By the end of it, I was pretty worn out, and because of my background, I felt like I was living a bit of a fake life. After struggling to get a job after graduating from Cambridge, he felt at a loose end. I felt if I had an Oxbridge degree, it would help me in life, he said. I didn't really know what to do. I came to the conclusion I should be doing something useful, and I set upon this idea to raise money for the charity shelter by cycling around the UK. That led to the idea of starting Freedom Bakery. Matt said the only ideal was to make sure it was really good, so it would leave a lasting impression on the person eating it, so they would understand where it came from, and maybe think more positively about who made that bread. It is important that our bread tastes great, and for us to be really successful, our people need to be cared for and paid fairly, and those things would combine it mean the bread we make is really doing good. Describe prisons as a microcosm of humanity, both good and evil. Matt said, for some, the odds have been stacked against them from the beginning, so we never really had a chance. An individual contacted us who had been in institutions from childhood. He is completely institutionalized, but wants to get out and can imagine a life he can have that will be healthy and rewarding, so that is what we are about. In October, the bakery moved to a larger premises, and it saw its sales increase by 12% last year despite lockdowns. Matt added, I feel it's really important to help people, but at the end of the day, they have to help want to help themselves. In terms of the help we can offer, that goes quite far with this. Anyway, that is our show for today. I am exhausted, tired. I need to desperately to get a drink. My throat is parched and numb. And I should probably eat something because I burned a whole lot of calories just by sitting here and talking for this past hour and a half. So thank you all for listening and for sticking around to the end. And it is a much longer episode than usual, but it was pretty important. So anyway, thanks for all for listening. Have a wonderful day. Peace.